You're listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Katie Frankowitz, and I'll soon be joined by my co-host, Skylar Butenshin. It's Monday, September 15th.
Renters' rights groups and homeless service providers in Oregon are cutting jobs and programs. This comes after lawmakers reduced funding in the state housing budget this year. OPB's Bryce Dole reports.
Evictions and homelessness have increased as Oregonians' wages fall behind the rising cost of living. Tenant advocacy groups are supposed to help out, providing housing and legal support. But these groups now have far less state funding than they used to, and some are laying off staff. Oregon lawmakers learned earlier this year that they would have hundreds of millions of dollars less to spend than originally thought. Tim Morris is the executive director of the Springfield Eugene Tenant Association.
We are approaching a future in which tenants are just alone and won't have folks in their corner able to help support them and defend them.
They're not alone. A church-run shelter and safe parking program in Marion and Polk counties cut 29 positions and ended programs due to the funding drop. I'm Bryce Dole, reporting.
The Trump administration wants to open undeveloped areas in national forests to road construction and logging. This would impact about 2 million acres in Washington state. An executive order announced in June would repeal what is known as the roadless rule. The administration says this will enable responsible timber production and better management of fire risks on nearly 59 million acres across the country. Leah Brewster is a campaign organizer with the Sierra Club. She says it's a misconception that roadless areas bring higher risk of fires, and that data shows more than 90% of new wildfires start within half a mile of a road because of people driving cars and trucks.
This is things like dragging chains, it's hot catalytic converters on grass. That's a huge portion of how these fires start. And one of the best things we can do to prevent more starts is to retain these old growth forests with these more fire resilient trees and to care for them and keep them free of roads.
The Sierra Club is partnering with tribes in Washington and Oregon, encouraging people to speak up in favor of keeping the roadless rule. Public comments on the Trump administration's proposal are open through September 19th.
The destructive emerald ash borer beetle has been increasing its range in the U.S. for decades. After being found near Forest Grove in 2022, it's now in five Oregon counties. The beetle is coming for Oregon ash trees. But as KLCC's Karen Richards reports, scientists and residents can help soften the blow.
Outside Cottage Grove at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Dorena Research Center, scientists are playing a numbers game. They're growing thousands of Oregon ash, sourced from up and down the West Coast, hoping to find the rare tree with genetic resistance to the emerald ash borer.
We've labeled each seedling, so when they're planted out, there will be a tag on it, so we'll know which parent tree it came off of.
As geneticist Richard Snesko shows me around the facility, he says he expects about 1 in 1,000 trees, or 5 of these 5,300, may be able to survive the beetle infestation. It's a gamble, but it could put the West Coast a step ahead of many other states. The invasive emerald ash borer, or EAB, was first detected in Michigan in 2002. Its larvae have killed hundreds of millions of trees. By the time the beetles are spotted, they've likely been in an area for years. They can't be exterminated. Snesko says Oregon ash grows from British Columbia to Southern California. It's common in the Willamette Valley and helps cool waterways and filter pollution.
What I like to tell people is that when some of these come in, sooner or later we have to realize that most of the standing trees, maybe 90, 95, 99% of them, are going to be gone.
We walk into a freezer that houses a backup solution. At 0 degrees Fahrenheit, it's shockingly cold. Snesko says more than 40,000 seeds from various regional trees, including Oregon ash, are preserved here. Being late to the invasion gives Oregon some advantages. Wyatt Williams, the invasive species specialist with the Oregon Department of Forestry, says that includes working with the beetle's natural predators or biological control agents.
We've had 20 years of science So we have science on forest genetics. We have science on biological control. Thanks to the USDA and ODA, we were able to release biological control agents the first year. No other state's been able to do that.
But Snesco says there's a limit to how many trees can be saved.
The individual trees that you value, there are, I think, chemical treatments that you can do it. But, you know, we can't treat millions of trees every year or every other year across a forest landscape. So that's not really a solution.
Because the Dorina Center is internationally known for studying trees' resistance to pathogens, he proposed breeding ash from various locations and planting the tagged trees.
When the emerald ash borer comes through, we'll see what's left, we'll know what the parent tree is, and then can get back to that tree, maybe graft it into an orchard or root it or whatever.
Williams says the seedlings raised in Dorina will be moved to 4 northern Willamette Valley plots this fall.
One of the test locations is going to be at the ODF seed orchard outside St. Paul, which is right in the middle of the two known populations of EAB in Oregon, that being the Forest Grove population and the Woodburn population. And so it's not inconceivable to think that EAB could be right there right now.
Williams says the emerald ash borer has been found in 6 new locations in 2025. Multnomah County was just added to the list with a confirmed sighting in Portland. He says the website OregonEAB.com has a map with a thick red line around the known sites. That's the quarantine area.
If you are inside the quarantine area, please do not move wood as you're camping this fall, especially. Source your firewood at your destination where you're going to be camping.
On the website, you can type in an address and find the current guidance for that location, and residents can help state scientists by reporting suspected beetle signs online. Snesco says people can also contribute by learning to identify ash trees and the signs of infestation. He was impressed that more than 1,000 people signed up to gather Oregon ash seeds this fall for future propagation, and he says people can help after the beetle goes through.
If there's different people to monitor their areas and say, hey, 99% of trees are dead, but here's a living one that's pretty big, and how come it's not dead? It's really up to you to help us find those rare parent trees that actually survive.
I'm Karen Richards, reporting from Dorina.
The major rehabilitation to the South Jetty at the mouth of the Columbia River has been completed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Portland District. Work on the South Jetty wrapped up in August after 6 construction seasons, marking the end of a decade-plus effort to restore all 3 jetties that protect one of the country's busiest trade corridors. Jetty A's rehabilitation was completed in 2016, and the North Jetty's rehabilitation wrapped up in 2019. The South Jetty project required more than 460,000 tons of stone, sourced from 7 quarries across Oregon and Washington. The most dangerous and technically demanding work came at the head of the South Jetty, where crews battled heavy surf while using GPS-guided excavators to place the largest stones with precision. According to the Port of Portland, more than 40,000 jobs in the Northwest region depend on seaport activity along the lower Columbia River. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com.
For weather today in the lower Columbia River region, mostly sunny with highs in the low 70s. Mostly clear tonight with lows in the low 50s. We are in the final days of KMUN's fall pledge drive. You still have plenty of time to swing by the station with your donation, call us with your donation, or go to our website, kmun.org, and click on the red donate button. We are so grateful for all the support that we have felt this pledge drive. Like, truly so much support in terms of dollars given, in terms of people just stopping by and talking with us and hanging out, the phone calls that we've received. We've had a lot of people who've called in for the very first time. And I know that a large part of that is due to the situation that we find ourselves in right now, where we've had Congress and the President of the United States claw back a whole bunch of funding for public media. I know that's been really alarming. It's definitely going to lead to changes here at KMUN, changes that I am absolutely sure we are going to weather and come out on the other side stronger. There will be changes to the news hours beginning on October 1st. Stay tuned for those. I've been talking about it a lot this pledge drive. Basically, if you want to catch local and regional news, you're going to want to start tuning in the mornings at 8:30 and 5:30 in the evenings. We're going to run that local and regional news 4 days a week instead of five, but we're going to have a lot more space to work with, a lot more space to bring you local information and local news. So please let us know if there's anything that you're really enjoying about the changes, if there's anything you hate. Feedback at KMUN.org is a great place to go. For now, call us at 503-325-0010 or head to KMUN.org to donate. You're listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. This schedule will change starting October 1st. That's when our contract with NPR officially ends, and we move into the brave new world of KMUN news programming. Starting on October 1st, there will be a show from news partners from 8 to 8:30, and then local and regional news and the Ship Report begins at 8:30. The Ship Report will play very close to the time that it already plays, 8:49, 10 to the hour. So if you're used to tuning in at that time specifically for the Ship Report, never fear, you do not have to change your habit. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.